to the Band of Brothers hotline and talk some West Coast Conference hoops. Jeff Eisenberg, national writer for Yahoo Sports, blogger. The Dagger is where he writes. Jeff, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, man. What do you think about that comment? You put the student athlete first. I mean, I don't know how much you cover recruiting with Yahoo. I'm sure you kind of keep your hand on its pulse, but you put the student athlete first, and you know, I think you'd be surprised at just how many great athletes you'll get.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that's part of the factor in any recruiting in any sports. But you know, for basketball, I think playing time is up there, facilities are up there, relationship with the coaches, you know, how successful a program has been both on the court and in getting kids on to the next level. I think those are things that kids certainly look at, but. You know, ultimately, if a program is doing what it can to help the players, put them in the best position to succeed, both while they're in college and beyond, I think that's a huge factor in what kids are looking for.
Jeff, how good is the talent in the West Coast Conference right now? Have they been able to recruit good enough talent to compete with the big guys around the country?
Well, obviously Gonzaga has. I think that Gonzaga, with that front court coming back this year, and you know, I don't think people know nationally a lot about their guards because, you know, people had seen Pangos and Bell for so many years. But the kids that are going to start for them, Josh Perkins is a former, you know, top 50, top 60 recruit. And Eric McClellan is a Vanderbilt transfer who, you know, was really successful in the SEC. And even someone like Kyle Dragonis, you know, has been a key player for them over the years, you know, even if he wasn't in a starting role. So I think Gonzaga is really good. I think they're a top 10, top 12 team again going into the season. I certainly think BYU is good enough to contend for an NCAA tournament bid. You know, we'll see how they do replacing Tyler Hogg's scoring and, you know, being a little bit more successful on the defensive end. I think that's the difference between contending for an NCAA tournament bid versus getting in solidly and, you know, maybe doing some damage this year. So those two clearly are on a national level. I think St. Mary's has taken a step backwards over the last two seasons. And I think Pepperdine is the team out of the rest of the conference that has a chance to step up and make it a three-team race, or at least three teams clearly at the top of the league, as opposed to just Gonzaga and BYU.
Jeff, it's pretty amazing what Gonzaga's done up there in Spokane over the years with a couple of different coaches too. And I just wonder, what are some consistencies that you can see, or some parallels maybe between what the Zags have done, and then you look at you know, a program like Kentucky or North Carolina that are perennially at the top. How does Gonzaga do that? How do they carve themselves out that place and consistently every year be the best team in the region?
Well, I think it's been kind of a gradual process over the years. I mean, at the start of things, they just sort of caught lightning in a bottle. You know, Dan Monson was the coach who started things, and Mark Few was on his staff. And, you know, they did a great job finding some under-the-radar talent. And they had a couple of good guards. Matt Santangelo and Richie Fromm made a couple of tournament runs. And unlike other programs that have done that and then faded away as soon as those kids have graduated, you know, the Florida Gulf Coast, the George Masons, those type teams, they were able to build on it. Mark Few has been able to get international talent into Gonzaga from Canada, from Europe, and that's helped them. They've been able to up their budget over the years. When they started things out, they weren't taking charter flights. They didn't have a practice facility, you know, all those things that major conference programs all do and have. And now they are, and they've been doing it for quite a while. And so you've seen Gonzaga kind of evolve from, you know, mid-major darling to a team that can compete with all the power conference teams on a regular basis, to a team that's recruiting top 100 players, getting the top transfers in the country the last couple of years, you know, able to find some off-the-radar talent in Europe and in Canada still. And at this point, I mean, you know, it doesn't matter what conference Gonzaga is playing in. They're one of the more respected programs in the country and certainly one of the most respected programs on the West Coast. They have, you know, as much TV time as an Arizona or UCLA. They're they're spending in a similar manner to those types of programs, and they're getting, you know, virtually the same quality of kids that those programs are. I don't think Gonzaga has quite made the leap to where they're getting in, you know, McDonald's All-Americans on a regular basis, like a Kentucky or a Duke or maybe a Kansas, North Carolina, Arizona. But, you know, outside of that group of five or six programs or so, I think they're right there with everyone else.
Jeff Collinsworth had a pretty special season last year, 6 triple-doubles, kind of raised his game a little bit. What do you see in him? What do you think he'll do his senior year? What kind of NBA prospect is he? How do you see Kyle Collinsworth?
Well, to me, I mean, I'm not sure how much better he could possibly be than he was as a junior, and I don't mean that as a knock on him. I mean it just as a compliment for how good he was last season. You know, he rebounded effectively. He got into the lane and created for himself and for other people. He was able to knock down jump shots. He got steals. I mean, he affected the game in almost every conceivable way for them. I thought, you know, Tyler Hawes probably had more national recognition just because of his scoring and what he had done in previous seasons. But I thought Kyle Collinsworth was clearly BYU's most complete player, probably its best player last season. And, you know, to me, it was between him and Kyle Wilcher for who was the best player in the conference a year ago. So the NBA prospects, I think certainly another year of good health and another year of showing that knee isn't a long-term issue, that would help him. I'm a little bit surprised that he hasn't gotten more, you know, attention from an NBA perspective as it is. Not that I would have necessarily thought that he would have come out last year or had an opportunity to be in the first round last year, but I'm a little surprised that you don't see his name mentioned as a potential late first round, second round type pick this season. So who knows, maybe if he's a little bit more consistent, if he keeps the same consistency and even elevates his scoring a little bit this year without Tyler, maybe that'll happen for him. You know, sometimes it's hard to predict what the NBA folks are looking for.
How many triple-doubles does he accrue this year, Kyle Collinsworth, that is?
That's a good question. I think it will be less than last year just because I think he's going to be asked to score a little bit more and maybe not create quite as much. So maybe those assist numbers will, you know, won't be quite as prodigious. But I mean, with kids like Chase Fisher and some of the big men that they have this season, you know, even a Nick Emery who can score a little bit, there are options for him to pass the ball to. And so I suspect he'll at least get, you know, I don't know, 2 or 3 more this year.
Jeff, let me ask you a question about a big picture issue. We were reading yesterday about a possible shift in college basketball towards moving the season about a month ahead so that the season would start in December and finish in the end of April, first part of May, in order to avoid some of those mid-semester kind of things going on. It's been talked about for a while, but maybe it's got a little traction now. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, I hate this idea with a passion, and I'll tell you why. I think the NCAA tournament is the most valuable thing that college basketball has going for it. It dominates the sports landscape in March the way it is, and a huge reason for that is that it doesn't have a whole lot of competition. You know, football's over. The NBA playoffs aren't for another month. The NHL playoffs haven't started yet. Baseball doesn't start until Final Four weekend. There's just not a whole lot else going on. And I'm not saying that the NCAA tournament wouldn't matter if it was in May, but I certainly think if it was competing against the NBA playoffs and competing against the NHL playoffs and competing against baseball and, you know, there's better weather in other parts of the country, you know, I just don't think it dominates the sports landscape the way it does in March. And would moving the college basketball season, you know, to start the second semester and get it away from football, would that help the regular season? Probably. There would probably be a little bit more attention early in the season than there is right now. But I don't think the benefits of a little extra regular season attention nearly outweigh the potential damage you'd be doing to the cash cow of the sport and to, you know, what is bringing in the revenue, bringing in eyeballs, you know, doing the most good for college basketball. So if there's a way to move the season and still keep the NCAA tournament in March or, you know, push it back a week or something like that, I can certainly live with that. But, you know, if they're talking about making it a second semester sport, I just don't think that that's a wise idea for college basketball's future.
Jeff, another big picture item is the 30-second clock this year in college basketball. What do you think of difference that 5 seconds will make in the game that everyone is so excited to have start. You know, it's a couple of weeks away, but well, how do you think it will affect the game?
I feel like I've probably talked to, I don't know, 15, 20 coaches about this over the last few months, and I feel like I get a different answer from everyone I talk to. You know, some are convinced that it's going to have no impact whatsoever. You have other coaches that are implementing zones and presses in practice right now who have never run those systems before because they think that it might make a difference with the shorter shot clock. To me, I think it will make an impact. I don't know if it'll be a huge impact, and I'm also not sure if it'll be the intended impact. Obviously, these rule changes this offseason were made to increase scoring and, you know, to make the game more attractive for viewers, less stoppages in play, and more points, basically. And I know BYU fans are like, well, why would college basketball need that? There's plenty of points right now, but obviously most teams aren't scoring like the Cougars are. To me, with a 30-second shot clock, all you're doing is making it easier on the defense because, you know, if you press and you you keep a team from crossing the mid-court stripe for, you know, 8, 10 seconds or so, all of a sudden you don't have a whole lot of time to run your offense. And so, number one, I wonder, we're going to see more possessions, certainly, because of the 30-second shot clock, but I don't think we'll see higher shooting percentages. And then number two, I worry about that trend of the shot clock getting shorter and shorter, because I think one of the great things about college basketball is the variety of styles of play. You can have a VCU that presses nonstop for 40 minutes. You can have a Virginia that drains the shot clock, you know, down to 6-7 seconds in an effort to get a good shot and almost never runs. And I like that. Having covered the NBA before where everyone runs a high screen and roll, every offense looks virtually the same. I really like the variety in college basketball. And I don't think the 30-second shot clock kills it, but I think it moves in that direction. And if we ever go down to a 25, 24-second shot clock, I think then you have you know, the NBA situation where everyone looks the same.
Yeah, Jeff, I totally agree. And I think anything that makes the college game look like the NBA is a bad thing. Because the NBA, in a lot of games, and you know, during the season, even during the playoffs sometimes, it's just unbearable. It's hard to watch. And I like what you say, that the college basketball has variety in how it attacks the game. And you can see different, you can watch three, you know, ESPN games on a night and see six different styles from games that you're watching.
Yeah, I mean, I love the NBA from the standpoint of that it's the best players in the world going at one another and the best talent in the world and all that. And I think the playoffs are great because, you know, you see everyone playing up to their highest level and highest, you know, effort and all that sort of stuff. As a former beat writer, having sat through 82-game seasons, there are some brutal games in the middle of the year.
And, no kidding.
You know, yeah. I'm not saying there aren't brutal college games too. There are, but at least they look different sometimes. Whereas, you know, if you're watching, you know, I don't know, Bucks Nets in January, and you know, it looks exactly the same as the previous 40 Bucks Nets games. That's it's not ideal. So that'd be my biggest concern with the shot clock is if it keeps moving in that direction. I'm not sure that's healthy for college basketball.
You did a breakdown of the West Coast Conference. Where does BYU end up this year? Any opportunity to maybe stun Gonzaga?
I mean, it's certainly possible, and I think they're Gonzaga's biggest competition. And you know, maybe if I'm wrong about Gonzaga's guards, then you know they prove a little bit more vulnerable than I've given credit for. BYU is certainly the team that I would think would be able to take advantage, but I still think the gap between Gonzaga and BYU is fairly considerable, just like I think the gap between BYU and Pepperdine and, you know, the rest of the league is still pretty considerable. So I'd be pretty surprised if over the course of a season-long schedule that Gonzaga wasn't the best team in the league and BYU wasn't second. I think the bigger question is, you know, is Gonzaga a Final Four type team this year like they, you know, were really close to last year? And again, is BYU one of the bubble type teams this year, or can they make that jump and, you know, improve a little bit defensively and become a team that's playing for speed over the last couple weeks of the season?
Jeff, we appreciate you hopping on with us. Great insight into the West Coast Conference, BYU, and just, you know, the college basketball game. Thanks so much, brother.
No problem. Anytime.